Good evening, folks. This is The Weird Part, and I am your host, Vincent Trewell. My very special guest tonight is none other than the well-renowned... paranormal researcher and podcast host and weird news specialist, Tim Banal. Very glad to have you aboard, Tim.
Hey, Vincent, how you doing? Thanks for having me on the show.
Pleasure's mine.
We've crossed paths multiple times down in Nashville, so it's time we have a chat.
Yes, indeed. Probably overdue.
Yes, I think you're the only podcast host that I've ever given a noogie to. So
I hope I'm not the only one, because yes, that's right.
Maybe folks. Probably got Adam too. Yeah, but yeah,
he did give me the first noogie I've gotten since junior high.
There you go. Yeah, during one particularly raucous evening in Nashville last year.
Very nuts. I think it was Josh Cushion that put his arm around my neck. It's cool. He does this with everybody.
He noogies everyone. You're in the club now.
Who is this guy attacking me? A good time was had by all.
It was a good time.
That was a couple years ago, but recently, yeah, we both just attended the Strange Reality Conference in Nashville, which you mentioned, mm-hmm, which is organized by Adam Sane and Surfiel Stevenson of the Conspiranormal podcast, and I think you will agree it was awesome.
Oh, it was fantastic. It was,
yes, as it always is.
Yeah, an amazing weekend.
You were a presenter, and your presentation was fascinating. Could you tell our listeners who might not have seen it a bit about what you had to say?
Okay, well, I'm, as I said at the start of the presentation, I'm incredibly blessed. I don't know why Adam and Surfiel are so kind to me, but they bring me down from Boston every year for the events. This was my fourth time in Nashville. In the previous year, the first time I was there, I talked about the flat earth theory. 2020, they had a virtual event, and I talked about this flat earth conference that I went to. And then the third year,
for just a second, you killed it with that flat earth stuff, because you actually got accepted by the flat earth community, which is no easy feat if you're not one of them.
Yes,
they laid it out like why they feel this way, and it didn't change my mind 1% about that they're wrong.
Right.
But it gave me some insight into understanding them. I thought it was fascinating.
Yeah. Yeah. They're an interesting group of people. Let's put it that way. An interesting subculture. Indeed. For sure. So anyway, then I was like, well, I can't keep doing Flat Earth. So I did Forest Fen Treasure a couple of years ago. Last year, I did the Yuba County Five. And what I was said at the beginning of this year's presentation was like, Adam and Surfiel are so kind. They let me talk about whatever I want. So they let me develop this crazy kind of portfolio of different presentations that I kind of have in my quiver, if you will. So this year I was like, well, last year Yuba County Five, folks don't know, it's this really depressing story about these mentally handicapped guys that went missing and died in the mountains of California. It's just a tragic, sad story. And I'm like, as I joked on Conspiranormal, I was like, that was my sort of comedian going for the Oscar buzz moment. Well, you know, I'm like, let me stretch myself and see if I can do tragedy. I can do comedy. Let's see if I can do tragedy. So I was really happy with how it turned out. But I'm like, the people don't come for Banal for tragedy. They come for Banal for sort of comedy. So it's like, so this year I did two feuds about two disagreements, conflicts, if you will, in the world of the paranormal. And I don't know about the second one necessarily paranormal, but the first one was sort of over webcam sightings of the Loch Ness Monster, and as the webcam presence has increased, pandemic, a lot of people watch the webcam, they're reporting what they thought were Nessie sightings, and then the purists, if you will, from the Loch Ness Monster community were like, these are shitty sightings, we don't want, you know, you need to banish these sightings from the official record. And it became a whole to-do in the Loch Ness Monster research community. And it was kind of an amusing just look at what goes on in a subculture, like the things that are so, they feel so passionate about. And at the end of the presentation, I did like a side-by-side between pictures from people at Loch Ness and the webcam. You really can't tell the difference. They're just blobs. They're just indecipherable blobs, whether they're from somebody on the shore of Loch Ness or via webcam. So there's really no difference between what's a good between the two types of sightings. Second story I did, I think that one kind of captured the audience's imagination a little more. I kind of captured my imagination as I was putting all the stuff together for the weekend. I was like, ah, shit, I wish I could really kind of stretch this into a whole thing, but it's not quite there yet because it's a still unfolding story. I'll try and make it brief, but Dennis Parada is the treasure hunter at the center of this story. Back in the 1970s, he was working at a furniture store. This psychic came in to do like a in-store promotion, and there was a treasure hunting magazine back in the 70s. Apparently they had treasure hunt magazines. I didn't know this, which I am very envious of. It sounds, there's a lot of cool shit back then that we just don't have now, you know, like detective story magazines and stuff.
I actually know about that because my uncle was into the treasure hunting magazines.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
He never found any treasure to the best of my knowledge, but it was interesting.
So in the Treasure Hunt magazine back in the 1970s, there was this article about an apocryphal story of this hoard of lost Civil War gold that was supposedly lost somewhere in Pennsylvania. And the psychic was like, I can tell you, they're like, oh, if you're so psychic, show us where this treasure they're talking about in the thing is. So the psychic like pointed to a spot on the map. The guy was like skeptical, but he went and got some dirt from the area, as well as some dirt from his yard, and like brought the dirt to the guy, because that's what the psychic said. He said, bring me some dirt from the general area where I put, and I'll tell you where it's like the closest. So the psychic, weirdly enough, like immediately dismissed the dirt that was from the backyard, and was like, okay, this dirt you got me, this is the closest to where the treasure is. So the guy, he kind of looked for the treasure a little bit, gave up, went back at it about 15 years ago or so, around the turn of the century, let's say. That covers the last 20 years. And he got, really narrowed it down to where he thought it was, and got like ground-penetrating radar pings and shit that suggested there was a massive cache of gold there, essentially. Somehow they can tell that from the thing. So he eventually got connected to the fucking FBI and told the FBI about all this. The FBI was like, I don't know. They went to the spot with him. They did their own tests. They detected something strange there. So then they came in to dig it up, essentially. And they were told him that he could hang out and sort of observe and see what they find. Anyway, then on the day of the hunt, they pretty much kept him out of the scene, him and his compatriots out of the scene, kept him at arm's length. On the first day, they were like, all right, we got to shut down for the day, you know, go home. Next day, they're like, oh, we're having some delays. And then like halfway through the day, they brought him up and they're like, all right, man, take a look. The hole's empty. There's nothing there. So, you know, get the fuck out of here and don't tell anybody about this because you're going to look like a total idiot because there's no gold here. So the guy kind of was like, that didn't quite add up to him. And then he started digging around a little bit more and he found out from people who lived in the area that apparently there was some digging that was going on overnight. They heard digging going on overnight. And so he's like, I think he thinks that the FBI took the fucking gold out in the middle of the night, spirited it away, and then told him that they didn't find the gold. And so now he's suing them, and he's been mixed up in this. This was 2018 when the hunt happened, and then the lawsuit followed like six to nine months after. So now he's been battling them in court now for like the last 5 years, 4 or 5 years, over trying to get all the documents on what they dug up. And they were super, super secretive about it at first. At first they were like, we were just doing they were very roundabout. They wouldn't even admit they were looking for treasure or anything. Then finally, like 3 years into the lawsuit, because the documents showed that they were looking for the gold, they were like, yeah, we were looking for the gold, but we didn't find anything. And they had their own, an additional ground penetrating expert who like looked at the thing, and the guy's results said that there was a large deposit of gold in the area where they were going to dig. So, and apparently the treasure hunters have gone back and they've done ground, and then there's nothing there anymore. So it's it's sort of really contentious, and it's still winding its way through the legal system now. They just keep pushing for more and more documents. They want to start deposing people who were involved in the treasure hunt and everything. So it's, you know, it's an interesting case. So I'm following it really closely. It's part of my job with the Coast to Coast website. I kind of get on these stories that I really like treasure hunt stories. So I was really into the Forrest Fenn story. And then when that wound down a couple of years ago, then I was like, this other one picked up steam right around the same time. It's a completely different kind of treasure hunt. It's like now it's like a Raiders of the Lost Ark hidden warehouse treasure hunt. It's like this guy's trying to force the government to admit they took the gold. That would be quite a revelation. I don't know. I have my doubts that he's going to be able to crack it and get them to admit it, but he's real persistent, and you know, they keep releasing files and shit, and the higher up courts keep forcing them to keep, because at one point the government was like, yeah, I was like, look, we have 200 whatever something files, but we can't, it's going to take years for us to release it. And I was like, dude, that was, you had the odd thing happened last year. It's not like you have to go, like, it's probably not even out of a file cabinet in the main office yet. Like, it hasn't been shuffled out or whatever. Like, it should be really easy for you to get those files and turn them over to the guy. So, like, you know, some higher up court was like, no, you got to fucking turn these files over. You can't just say it's going to take 10 years or whatever. So, you know, as more, he's gotten more and more stuff, but still very, no smoking gun yet. You know, he's fighting for that smoking gun.
And what struck me about that particular case was this was government gold. It wasn't like the guy could just keep it if the treasure hunter found it. I mean, several things struck me about this. One, this bargain basement psychic somehow has a real actual psychic insight and tells where it is, which is, he's not, you know, a renowned,
figure. A caveat to the story, is that, like, as this all came to a head, like, in the last few years, a reporter, I don't want to say the publication because I don't remember. I might misattribute the publication, but a reporter did a really fantastic in-depth piece. I want to say it was like the Atlantic or the New Yorker. It was one of those two. They had a really in-depth piece on the whole story and, like, track down the psychic's kids. And apparently they have a podcast and they're like kind of a comedy podcast. And they talk all the time about what a deadbeat their dad was. And they had no idea that he was even a purported psychic. He was just kind of like a get-rich-quick guy who's bounced around to all different things. And they were like, we never even heard about his time as a psychic. He never mentioned being psychic. So it's even weirder where it's like, so this probably phony psychic directed this treasure hunter to this area where a genuine expert brought by the federal government detected something sizable and presumably gold in the fucking ground and set off all this. So it's a really weird story. There's a lot of weird elements to it.
It is. And we're not talking, you know, a small amount of gold. We're talking hundreds of pounds of solid gold bars, you know.
Tons.
Price of gold per ounce. I mean, it'd be an absolute fortune. But it totally belonged to the federal government and was buried on government land. And it just seems like, it looks like the FBI is lying. But why they have any reason to lie instead of just telling the guy, it's ours.
The other twist to the story, in a sense, is that it's an apocryphal tale. It comes from like a magazine, a book or something that was written prior, like, on the 100th anniversary of the Civil War. And it was like, I'll hear on the 100th anniversary of the Civil War. It's like an article in there. Here now is this story of the lost gold. And that's the only, that's the original source of the story, like a 1940 something story about this incident where the gold went missing. There's no, as far as anyone can tell, there's no government documentation about the gold going missing. They claim the Pinkertons were brought in to like look for the gold during the Civil War incident, and they couldn't find anything, but there's nothing. The Pinkertons apparently have very meticulous files, because apparently like there was nothing in the rich history of the Pinkerton security or whatever that had any indication. Apparently they have documentation of what Pinkertons were up to at the time. And it's like, no, there was no, they were never apparently called upon to go find the Civil War gold. So it's like, is the story even fucking true? And if the story isn't true, like, what is buried there? You know, part of you wonders, like, did they dig up a UFO or some shit? You know, it's like, what did they find there? If anything, it's very weird because, yeah, it's like they're being super fucking shady. I think I said either somebody in conversation at the event or the Q&A part where it's like, look, this guy has pestered them so much. You would think that they would just turn over. If they really didn't find anything, you'd think that they would just turn over everything. Like, they've already been shown, like, any sense of embarrassment on the part of that the FBI went and looked for it. That's, like, already fucking happened. Like, everyone's kind of like, oh, we know you did this. So there's no reason to, like, cover their reputation as far as this treasure hunt goes. It's already blown out. And this guy keeps bothering them. You'd think that if they really found nothing, you'd think that they'd be like, you know what, dude, fuck you. Here's everything. Here's like a video. Here's like an ongoing video of the entire dig and how we didn't find it. Like get out of here, man. So the fact that they're being so secretive about it just makes the whole thing really weird.
Yes, it is. It is a very strange story. Oh, by the way, I just wanted to say, honestly, thanks for bringing up Loch Ness Monster. Loch Ness Monster was something I was in my formative years, was a big, much bigger deal than it is now. Maybe because we never found anything. But, you know, and you're right. Most of the alleged evidence could be a log. It could be a buoy. It could be somebody's life jacket that fell overboard. There's really nothing very impressive that I've seen in any recent time. But it's just good to hear about the Loch Ness Monster again.
Yeah, nobody talks about the Loch Ness Monster anymore. It's depressing. It's actually still a pretty healthy, as I kind of just showed in the presentation, that it's still a pretty healthy community of Nessie enthusiasts, if you will. You know, much healthier than some of these other classic mysteries. It's like Bermuda Triangle, like there's no... I don't even think there's anybody. Yeah, nice. I see what you did there. Nice, but yeah, I don't see. There's no like Bermuda Triangle research community, as far as I can tell, anymore. You know, there's like two or three people kind of still kicking around the Amelia Earhart thing, but they just kind of that's fizzled out. Don't get me started on spontaneous human combustion. That never happens anymore. Believe me, I look every day. I look for that would be like a gold mine for me. But I never get any spontaneous human. So a lot of the classic, a lot of the classic cases are kind of fading away as time goes by. So at least Nessie is still, I think as long as there's a Loch Ness, there'll be a Nessie. They make their bones on, a lot of their bones on Nessie. I think I read somewhere that it's like a genuine, like, multi-million pound tourist draw for the United Kingdom.
Oh, yeah,
I'm like
sure it's
one of the biggest. Yeah, so they'll never get rid of Nessie.
I can't imagine, like, if I was going on a tourist trip to Scotland, not going there. You know what I mean? And see other stuff and not see that. No, I'd have to see that too.
Yeah, that would have to be, like, number one place to go. I think I'd be like, I'm flying to Scotland. First, we're going to go to Loch Ness, and then we'll do all the touristy shit. But I need to commune with fucking Nessie here. I need to sit on the shore of Loch Ness. That would be fucking awesome, wouldn't it? The shore of Loch Ness and kind of, you know, for folks listening, I'm doing like this meditative pose, just kind of try and be like, I'm here, Nessie, dude. I'm right here. I am right on the shore, Nessie. Let's tango, baby. So
that would be so cool. Some dinosaur looking creature come walking out of there.
Oh
man,
yeah.
That's a peak experience.
for sure.
How did you get into this? What's your paranormal origin story? Were you always interested in this stuff, like as a kid, or was there some formative experience?
Well, like a lot of people, I can credit TV to kind of, I think, to get me into this. And I think what really clued me into the world of paranormal was Unsolved Mysteries, because I remember as a kid loving that show when I was like in elementary school. So that had to be what turned me on to the paranormal. And then I think I lost interest by the time I got to like high school or something like that, you know, it was just a lot of fucking and fighting, right? That's what you're doing in high school and college, right? Fucking and fighting. So, I got mixed up in a lot of that, and then a lot of partying and having a good time. And then I got out of college like in 2001, and I was right when 9/11 happened. So it was like the whole world changed like overnight. Literally, like I graduated in May of 2001. Oh, 9/11 happened on 9/11. So like 3 months later, my dad was like, he was kind of a hard ass, God bless him. It probably was for the best. So I got out of college. He's like, gave me a sheet of paper. He's like, here's how much you owe. And then here are the want ads. So I ended up becoming an overnight janitor at my high school, where I literally went to high school. So it was really super weird. And then I got tuned into Coast to Coast. So that didn't happen really till 2003 that I started listening to Coast to Coast. So I kind of bounced around shit. And actually what piqued my interest was, I think a lot of shit came together around the end of 2002, but for some reason, I picked up Jim Marr's Rule by Secrecy.
Yeah.
I was intrigued by conspiracy theories for some reason. Cause this was like 2 years after 9/11. So it wasn't even anything like that. So I read that like cover to cover and I was like really blown away. And then I read Alien Agenda right in the next week, essentially. And then I got super, and then I started really kind of like trying to find out more and more information. This was like 2002. This was like super, like, if you weren't online back then, folks, I can't even explain to you like how nascent it was. There really wasn't. There's just, it was like 1% of what you see online was like online back in 2002. It was really super the Wild West and really hard to find any information and shit.
You couldn't. So, Google did not exist, and nothing.
I think Google did exist. I think Google came along right about the turn of the century. I remember somebody cluing me into Google right when I was about to graduate from college. So like, try this new thing, Google. It's better than Yahoo, because I had been using Yahoo because that's what everybody uses as a search engine until Google came along. So I'm like, this, yeah, you know, I'm like, I can't find anything on Yahoo about it. They're like, have you tried Google? And I'm like, what the fuck is that? Like, it's a new thing. It's a new one. I'm like, what the fuck? So, you know, like, this internet's a fad. I don't know how long it's going to last. So
I remember thinking exactly the same thing in the late 90s. this will be gone. You know, this is too impractical.
Yeah, right. So
I may have been wrong.
Yeah. So I got into the Jim Marr shit. I was looking around the internet, but it was really super, you know, rudimentary back then. A friend of mine was like, you should listen to the Art Bell Show because you're on the overnight. And I'm like, all right. So I, you know, I started listening to Art Bell. This is right when Art Bell retired. So I started listening to Coast to Coast. Then I was like, oh, I'd like to ask these guests a question, but I don't have, I'm on the job. I can't really call in and be on hold and all that. I think this is even before like cell phones were really widespread. So like I would have to have sat like in an office with the phone on and shit. So I'm like, well, what if I, at the time, well, I was still a huge wrestling fan. At the time I was subscribing to this wrestling podcast, it wasn't a podcast, wrestling news website. And they had these things called audio updates. And they were like just MP3s you could download from the website and put on your whatever it was called back then, the iPlayer, you know, the, what was it? iPod? iPod, yeah. So you put in your iPod.
Always been Android, right? So I wouldn't know.
Okay, so you'd listen to them on your iPod or your MP3 player. That's back when you had MP3 players, right? Now you just do it all through your phone. So I was like, I got a great idea. What if I call these guests, these people I want to interview or talk to, like Jim Mars and Stan Friedman and Rich Dolan and people like Brad Steiger, people like that, people I heard on Coast to Coast. Like, what if I like talk to them and say, I want to talk to you, do an interview. And then I'm like, then I'll just take the MP3. I'll record the phone call, make it an MP3 and then put that on the internet. You know, and people can download it and listen. So the show, if you really look into the fabric of the show, it's called Banal America Audio because there was no such thing as podcasting back then. The whole cast thing hadn't come along. So that's why it was Banal America Audio, because it was like the audio part of our website. So that was it. That was back in 2005. So 18 years ago. And then we launched Banal America. Show went rolling along. Coast to Coast brought me in to be their news editor around the end of 2015. And so now I write for Coast to Coast. Banal America kind of faded out for a while. Now it's back. We revived the show this fall, and we're hoping to keep it running for quite some time. I'm really enjoying being back on the airwaves. So that was a very long origin story, but I think it covered everything. How I got to being here on Here's Where It Gets Weird.
The weird part, but yes.
Oh,
No,
oh.
It's all good. No,
we're gonna have to start over. No, I'm just
no way, man. But I was doing some research for the tonight, yeah. And I didn't realize how long Banal of America in some form existed. Like, you were literally podcasting before there were podcasts.
Right.
And then when podcasting became a thing, you were like one of the very first. I was looking at some stuff you were doing in like 07. And I'm like, I didn't know what the hell a podcast was back then. I got into podcasting through the most mainstream way possible, which was NPR's Serial.
I was just going to say, was it Serial?
Yeah, it was Serial. Yes.
Yeah, I think that kind of started the podcast boom all across the internet. It was like, that was, you know, that was kind of the tipping point where people were like, all right, what is this podcast thing?
Yes.
So, and yeah.
I remember wanting to do something like that, but Serial had like a staff of 35 people. They had audio engineers, they had writers, they had researchers, they had everything that I don't have.
Right.
I'm like, okay, so what do I do? Like, burn some CDs and mail it to NPR? I mean, how do I do this? And, you know, then it occurred to me, a light bulb went on. Hey, I wonder if there are paranormal podcasts. Well,
wow, yeah.
This is before there was 10,000 podcasts on everything you could possibly mm-hmm. think of. And
yeah.
There were a couple. And I started listening to them like, hey, this is just like one or two people just doing it. You don't need a staff of 35 to do this. You can just do it. And that's when I started my floundering attempts at doing what I'm doing now. But you were doing this like 10 years before that. And it was, wow. I was amazed to find that out.
Yeah, it's been an interesting journey. My only sort of regret would be that we didn't sort of evolve with the times. We kind of just, the relaunch, like last fucking October, we always recorded the phone. I was really steadfast in keeping the show the way it was in 2005, which 18 years ago. So we would record over the phone, essentially. You'd have to be on the phone. And it got to be just kind of too onerous. And I found that, like, people are just now they're more accustomed to talking the way we are tonight on like Zoom or whatever. It's just like, it's a hassle, I think, for people to be on the phone.
Prefer this to the regular, like maybe landline or cell phone. Right. Yeah.
And trying to connect like through the switch, I was using Blog Talk and it was like, people would, I think, would try to come up. They would be on different like things, I think, and it would just fuck up. The sound never. It's just we did a bunch of episodes like in early 2021, and it seemed like one episode after the other had all kinds of fucking technical problems. And I was just like, this isn't working. And like, this is, you know, when you're doing a show, as I'm sure you kind of can attest if you've been doing this for a while, it's like, when shit goes wrong, it's like you just can't. It just takes you completely out of the show, and it
interrupts
like,
your flow. Yeah,
yeah, and that happened like on the whole string of episodes, and I'm just like, this fucking whole little mini comeback is snake bit, and I'm like, I'm fucking done. And then I just kind of stopped for like a year, you know, a year and a half or whatever, and then Steve Berg kind of convinced me to hurry up and come back. Every time we'd all hang out, we were like, why don't you bring the show back and shit. And I'm just kind of explained the whole situation. So finally, Steve Berg kind of like held my hand and showed me like how to do it. And the funny part was like, you got to go out and get a microphone. And I'm like, I have a mic. This microphone I'm on right now. It's like I've had it in the closet behind me for like 5 years. Because at some point I had always anticipated setting up this new version of an All American, but I just could never get around to it. So I guess something happened this summer. I was like, I'm finally going to just do it. So,
hey, I'm glad to hear it. The last time I remember you putting out new shows was right around the 2021 Strange Realities, and I listened to a killer episode where you're with Greg Newkirk, and
yeah,
that went really good, man. That was
fascinating. Oh, thanks.
You know, so yeah, I will be happy as hell to hear Banal of America again. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, well, you can get on there right now and check it out. And folks who are listening now, if you're on the YouTube, as I call it, because I'm an old man, if you're on the YouTube, get over to the YouTube.
I'm at least 10 years older than you, so you know.
Get on the YouTube and subscribe to Banal of America. You know, it's, they're really, I'm not made for the YouTube world, so I'm still adjusting to that. We're on regular podcasts, but on the YouTube, it's like, I say, Bruce Magnan, who's my YouTube guy, I'm always just like, why? They don't get anything when they subscribe. It's like, just, but you like gotta tell them to subscribe. It's like, all right, so subscribe.
Yes, and
apparently the show pops up when you're on there. If you're, you know, it pops up, and I don't know.
I also have a YouTube channel, and you know, please
subscribe. I'll subscribe there. There you go.
Roll all from that there, you know.
Yeah.
Just search Vincent Treewell in quotes and you'll get it. And
there you go.
You know, I put every episode there as well as everywhere else. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's how we do it too. Well, I'm glad you enjoyed that episode with Greg Newkirk. We got a whole shitload of good ones that just came out with part of the revival. So our buddy Steve Berg, who I know you had on the show recently.
Oh, yeah.
Nate Brislin talking about Crawlers.
Oh, man.
Yeah, that's a really good one. Jack Brewer and Erica Lukes talking about UFO shenanigans. When's this episode coming out that we're on now?
Within the next couple days.
Oh, excellent. So, yeah. Did you meet Adam Taula at Strange Realities?
Oh, yes. Yes, I did. We actually hang out. The Paranormal Polynesian?
Paranormal Polynesian. He's going to be on Banal of America this week.
Ah,
so.
Cool. Cool. So
yeah,
he's a really great guy.
Yeah, yeah. So he's on this week. So lots to check out. So get on over there and check it out. But let's continue our conversation, man. Yeah, I'm glad you enjoyed that episode. We got all our plugs in here.
Oh, I heard you talking to one of the Flat Earth people. I've listened to a bunch of Banal of America, just not, nice. You know, lately. Yeah.
No, I understand. I'm just busting your balls. I can't noogie you through the screen, so.
Well, thank God for that. But anyway, hey, you know, this is the weird part. So I have to ask, what are some of the weirdest things you've come across in your research?
Oh, boy. Oh, man. I'm kind of like numb to weird almost at times. with the job with Coast to Coast, I come across weird. I really come across a shitload of weird stories, like really, but I guess what really interests me nowadays is just weird circumstance, people in weird circumstances, like they you wouldn't believe it. There's a story I did back in February or March that was like, I want to say it was in Belgium, but this three people in Belgium, for some insane reason, probably because they were under the influence of something, they decide to play a game of Monopoly on a sidewalk in a major city in Belgium, probably the capital. And so they're at like 5 o'clock in the morning. So okay. They're playing. Yes, yes. This is a true story. This actually happened.
Doesn't seem to be a factor, but go ahead.
Yes, actually happened. So they're playing a game of Monopoly on the sidewalk at like 5 o'clock in the morning. Right in front of like a residential like apartment, you know, building. And so a fucking tenant shouting at them, shut up, get out of here, comes down with a stick, starts, you know, brandishing it. I think that it was like yelling and screaming at them. Then his son comes running down, get this, with a samurai sword. Okay. So a scuffle ensues. The son ends up stabbed by his own samurai sword, and he winds up in critical condition at the hospital. I never found out what became of him, but that's a true story. So, like, yeah, I run across, you know, two or three of those like a month that I'm just like, what in the world? Like, what are like what?
It
are
may
you
not
serious?
Be paranormal, but it's just like, how do people get to that point where you're naked and on top of another guy chewing his face off?
Right. Yeah, it's,
you know,
it's
the one I'm referring to in Florida. Yeah, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, the zombie guy. Yeah,
maybe it's just drugs, but good lord, that's weird, you know.
Yeah, it's just, you know, so it's like a series of weirdness upon weirdness upon weirdness. I find those kind of like, I mean, that's like, you ask me like the weirdest thing I've seen in a while. That's probably really it. Like, it's in the last year. That was like, I'd have to look over some of the other stuff I wrote about, but that's kind of, you know, I mean, the whole paranormal is weird. I'm steeped in weird. So it's just it's got to be really, it's got to be really weird to catch my interest in a sense.
Indeed, indeed. I get you. Let me totally shift gears here completely.
Sure.
And ask you a personal question. And, you know, as open as you care to be. Not, what are your dreams like?
They're like kind of vivid, but I only really remember them very briefly, like when I first get up. Only for like a couple of minutes, and then I pretty much forget them. And I couldn't even tell you about a dream that I've had. That's how, you know, recently or maybe ever, because I can't think of a single dream that I've had that like stuck, certainly didn't stick with me for the rest of my life or even recently. I forget them very quickly. So I remember waking up and I remember being like, wow, that was wild. That was like, because they seem pretty wild. But then, you know, within an hour or so, I pretty much have forgotten about it. And then within a day or two, it's just completely gone. Like, I couldn't tell you anything. And I'm not being coy or whatever.
No.
I have a medical condition. I don't know.
No. But I've had very few significant dream experiences. I've had a few, but they're extremely limited. Some people have this, you know, rich dream life where they're almost living like two lives. That's not me. Now, part of that is because I take prescription medication for nightmares. You know, it's related to the war and stuff. But anyway, and it works. So I don't have like a lot of nightmares, but I also almost never remember my dreams. When I do, they're usually something very unusual, you know? I've had like one in the last couple of years that I wrote down. Well, I texted myself at like 3 a.m. to say, hey, I had this dream. And it was a flooded New York City.
Oh, geez.
And being there and this bizarre creature that looked like a Dr. Seuss drawing is an alien that's telling me that, you know, the city's flooded and that I'm underwater and it's crazy. Damn. But it was significant enough to send myself a text at 3 a.m. But it's rare for me too. It's really rare.
And I can hear the people like saying, you should write them down. It's like, I don't know. Maybe I should, but I just don't. I don't know. I have no compunction to write them down. It's like, hey, you know.
So, and some people get a lot of that out of that, but some people don't, you know.
Yeah.
This is so very specific to individuals, I think, you know.
Oh, absolutely,
How you interact with this stuff. I guess that kind of segues into, have you ever had any paranormal experiences in your own life?
Just the one. Well, I've had two really insignificant. Well, one insignificant one, one fairly significant one. So the significant one was I told the story of Strange Reality. So I'll give it sort of a quick version. But so the my father passed away in May of 2007. So 6 months later was my birthday. So it was January 2008, and I got some scratch tickets. Now my dad was like, he was a lot like me. He was very irreverent. Yes. He's like a prankster.
Yes.
He had this thing called a fart machine, which was like a little, we're on video, but it's like a little box, like a little like thing. And then you would put it somewhere and then add a remote and you would hit it and you put it under like someone's chair. It's like a technological whoopee cushion, right? Yes. And then you hit it and then it would fart and the other person like, what the hell? You know, you could mess with them. So he like loved this thing. He thought it was like the funniest thing ever. So after he died, we had just put it on like a shelf, not in this room, but we have a lot of like similar shelves. So we put it on a shelf somewhere. And it just sat there for like 6 months and never went off or anything. Never. It was just like, it was as dead as my dad, you know. With that's crass, but I guess it's my dad, so I can say it, right? But it was just on the shelf collecting dust. So 6 months later, it was my birthday, and I had some scratch tickets, which I did not win on. Feel like I should say that first. So the story, if I feel like it builds up to something better in the story, but so I did not win all the scratch tickets, but I was about to scratch them, and I'm like, all right, Dad, give me a winner here. And then the fucking fart machine went off, and that was the only time it went off, and the only time I'm not laughing at you.
No.
It's a weird, it's almost like an embarrassing kind of story, but it's true. And I need to get over that embarrassment.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, it's...
It kind of... So, pull my finger, man.
Yeah, it was... I mean, I can't even explain it. So, to me, it's like, that's kind of the proof you need for some kind of something. I don't know. There's something out there, man. It's like, mm-hmm. Unless I psychically somehow made the box go off, which is like... That's the only, you know, that's the only two ways. I think
you won some tickets. But
yeah, no shit, right? So that was the profound sort of one. And I always feel kind of weird telling the story, but I should just get over that because it is a pretty awesome story. But
oh, it is. It totally is. And it sounds like something that, correct me if I'm wrong, rather than give you like some big winnings, he's kind of telling you, no, go out there and get it your own.
Yeah, for sure.
And it kind of reflected his personality in life.
Absolutely, yeah. And he gave me this crazy story. So it's like, it's really something mm-hmm. else. I don't even know if, I'd have to ask my mom, but I don't even know if we have the fart machine anywhere nowadays. So that's how, like, it just never, nothing ever happened, you know, it never, uh-huh. I didn't try or anything after that. It was just like, I kind of just took it, just like, well, that was pretty fucking weird. And that was just kind of all I, you know, that I scratched the tickets. I was like, I wasn't going to, you know, I wasn't like, I was just kind of like, well, that was weird. I had a similar reaction. I was working as an overnight janitor, as I said, way back in the early aughts when I was really young, like my early 20s. And at the time, this is before I was listening to Coast to Coast. You remember I said I graduated, went to work 2001, discovered Coast to Coast 2003. So it was like 2 year gap where I was kind of bumming around. Since I had so much time on my hands, I was reading all the time. And because again, folks, this is before podcasts or anything. So, and I didn't know about Coast to Coast. So it was that I listened to music. So at some point I took note of how voracious I had been reading. And I'm like, I need to fucking take on a big project. And I'm like, I'm going to read the Bible because everybody knows the fucking Bible. But it's like, how many people have read the Bible? Like, actually read it cover to cover. So I'm like, I'm going to do it. It's like running a marathon. That was kind of my thought. No, like, search for greater meaning or anything like that. Just, I'm going to swim the English Channel. Like, I'm going to read the Bible cover to cover just to see if I can, just to fucking do it. See how long it takes. I think it took me, like, 4 months.
Oh, yes. I mean, if you have no religious feelings whatsoever, it's a core part of Western civilization, and there's a ton of information in there,
right?
And it's a very, that's a good idea. Yeah,
well, I'm a pop culture freak, so I can tell if anyone else is, you will, it's like loaded with like reverse Easter eggs. It's like loaded with all kinds of Easter eggs that if you're a fan of pop culture, you'll be like, oh, so that's where that comes from. It's just tons of that, you know. So anyway, just reading all this. At some point, I was in a, you know, I went down to have a smoke one night. It was in the middle of the book, you know, middle of reading the Bible. And I'm like, it's just funny. Like, God doesn't fucking, you know, he's just always messing with people in the Bible and shit. And it's like, he doesn't mess with anybody. And now you don't hear like anything like that nowadays and shit. So I don't even know what, you know, I was thinking. I was just kind of musing. So then I go back inside the school, and I start walking up this long hallway, and as I pass this elevator that's to my right, that has to be activated with a key, the door is open, and I had the same reaction kind of to the fart machine, where I just stood in place, looked about 8 feet away where the elevator was at the end of this hallway, looked in the empty elevator and just watched that until the doors closed. And then I'm like, oh, that was weird. And then I just kept going. So that's, talk about life regrets. Part of me wonders if I just should have gone in the fucking elevator. Like, I just should have gone in, like, what would have happened? You know,
I don't know, my was advice it headed up to, or headed down, you know?
Yeah, that's my advice to everybody out there. Get in the fucking elevator, because I would have loved to have seen it. Part of me just wishes that I would have gone in and it would have opened up like in 1975 or some shit. And I would have been like, what the fuck? I just time traveled. This is amazing. How do I get back? Do I want to get back? My life is a movie. So, but I probably nothing would have happened. Or I might have got stuck in there or something, because I didn't have the fucking key probably to get out. But anyway, those are the two, my only two of, you know, paranormal experiences.
Mm-hmm. That's very, both are very interesting. That's fascinating stuff, man. Let me see. Again, I'm going to shift and pivot on you and ask, what are your views on reincarnation?
I think it's real. I think there's some part, I think there's something to it. I think, like, a lot of this, I likened UFOs to, like, the clouds, but I think all these phenomena are like clouds, and it's like, we're desperately trying to figure out the system by which all this works, and we can't, by virtue of our position outside of whatever the afterlife bureaucracy is, we can't figure it out. You don't figure that out until you get there. But there's like, some people come back, some people become ghosts, some people fucking probably do other shit. You know, just probably, you know, maybe some people become Bigfoot. Who knows? It's like, there's some kind, something's governing this. Something is governing all this in the great beyond. And so it's like, that kind of is what mystifies me. Like I said, it's like, not everybody is being reincarnated, and like, not everyone is coming back as a ghost. So like, what are the factors with each one? You know, are you given some kind of choice? Like, what are the other choices? You know, it's it's kind of like, it's really intriguing in a lot of ways. That's why when people die, I'm sad they're gone. But I'm like, especially people in this field, I'm like, well, they're on the fucking great adventure now, man. Like, they're like, they get to find out what the fuck happened, like at Roswell or whatever, or if Bigfoot's real. I assume you get access to that information. God, I hope so. I fucking hope so, man. You know,
but I'm still in the phrase, afterlife bureaucracy.
Yeah, good. Man, there's some kind of like mechanisms going on behind the scenes that,
yes, and we don't know what it is, and
it's fascinating. But I think reincarnation is certainly occurs, let's say. I certainly think it occurs, you know, but,
and that's, to me, that's the closest thing I have to a religion, is that I know I've lived before. And I just,
interesting,
deep down, that's, you know, the only real spiritual, one of the very few I've ever had.
Have you had this like looked into, or is this a feeling you have?
I had a lot of memories since I was a small child of World War II and the Pacific and dying as a U.S. troop in the Pacific in World War II.
Wow.
I was like obsessed with that when I was like 5, 6 years old.
Oh, wow. Way before you'd really know about that.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
I'm like 6 or 7, and I basically harangued my mother into taking me to the Marine recruiting station.
Oh, wow.
And we're out running errands, and I can't sign up at the age of 6. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
And I just asked about it. She's like, fine. You know, it's 2 blocks from the bank. We'll just go there. Fine. And I went there, and the Marine recruiter's like, who the hell is this kid? But, they were very nice because they wanted me to come back in like 11 or 12 years, which I did.
Right.
And joined 2 months out of high school.
There you go. Thank you for your service.
Oh, hey, man. That's cool. But it's like I had that drive towards that.
Interesting.
And there were so many, when I was actually in the service, deja vu was just like overwhelming.
Really?
And that doesn't mean I was good at stuff. It just means I'd experienced it before.
Right, right, right.
Like so many things just were so familiar that they had no way of being familiar.
Yeah.
And my father had been a career school teacher. He did not, was not in the military. My grandfather's eyesight was too bad for him to be in the military. Really, I had no close relatives that would have like somehow influenced me. And this was the, you know, 1970s. You know, the military wasn't seen as really cool, you know, the way it is maybe now.
Oh, yeah, yeah, for sure.
It's the Vietnam, immediately post-Vietnam era. And yet that was just overwhelming to me. And when I was 12, I went to the air show. There's a rather prominent air show at Oshkosh, Wisconsin. And they reenact, they had the group called the Warbirds, and they reenact battles with real planes that were in the battles.
Yeah, yeah.
And they fire blanks and they like...
Yeah, like an air show. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yes. And these two guys were, would, no, this is, those guys are undoubtedly no longer with us, but this was when I was 12, so this is 40 years ago, you know? Yeah. And they're on stage, like, commentating on what happened during this battle in the Pacific. And I was just hit hard that it was so unfair that those guys could be up there telling the story. And I was there too. And I didn't get to tell the story because I died.
Oh, wow. Yeah. And yeah. Oh, damn.
Yeah. It was really intense. Like I was almost freaking out, you know, and I couldn't explain to anybody because I'm a 12-year-old kid.
How old were you? Oh, 12 years old?
Yeah.
Wow.
I can't explain to anybody that, no, I was really in this battle in the Pacific. This happened. You know? Yeah. But
have you tried to dig deeper, like to try and find out who you were? Like that, this, you could probably like,
it's tough, you know, to do this, because I don't know much else other than
I hate to recommend it. Hypnosis. That's the only I hate to recommend it, but that's the only cool.
I did that.
Oh, okay.
I did that. In fact, Star Vance from the Strange Realities.
Yeah.
Did that with me.
Oh, wow. Really?
We didn't record that one because it might, you know, we didn't know what might come up. We didn't do it for the podcast. We did it for my own personal problems.
Yeah.
You know, my own personal enrichment.
Edification. Yeah.
And a lot came up. Now, we both agreed before we started even talking about it, this is not a means of recovering accurate information. You know, you can't, it's not like a VCR. You can rewind it. It's not like streaming. You can go back to episode 3. I'm sorry, you know, season 3, episode 6. And I just want to see this. It doesn't work.
Right. Yeah.
If you believe you drove a Model T, you're not going to get the license plate number, you know?
Right.
But you can get something. And, oh, I got something. Believe me. It was a lot of confirmation. And now, that wouldn't stand up scientifically at all, but it was, I'm glad I did it. I'm really glad I did it.
Why do you have to fucking convince a scientist anyway?
Exactly.
You know, like, you're,
it just laid some stuff to rest for me.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what happened, you know?
Right. You're not trying to get a research grant or something.
Exactly. I got nothing to prove.
Jeez.
I'm not suing anybody, you know? But yeah, it was a really powerful experience. Yeah.
It sounds like it. It sounds tremendous. You should write it up or something. Write about it.
Yeah. Well, I did interview her and we did talk about it, but I should probably put something down on paper about that for sure. Man, we got a little side check of my life, but
it's cool, man. That was fascinating. That was riveting. Really, I did not know that about you, Vincent. So
it was good. It's a thing. It's really,
that was remarkable. I don't think I have ever met anyone with such a vivid near death, reincarnation, past life. Jesus, it's getting late. I don't think I've ever met anyone who had such a vivid past life account. And it sounds like I can't really, yeah, it sounds genuine, you know. It's not like someone who's like, I was Cleopatra or whatever, all that.
Yes, exactly.
Because I went to a hypnotist, you know, someone, everyone mm-hmm. always kind of, a lot of these stories come from people who like already had the, who didn't have, you know, they went, somehow came out in the hypnosis with like, oh, I was a farmer or whatever. And it's like, I don't know. I think they just told you that. So like yours sprung up before you even tried to get to the bottom of it, which is really remarkable.
And that was a very, you know, significant experience for me. I mean, both the things that happened as a youth and then revisiting them. And, you know, it was definitely worth it, whatever the factual basis. And I didn't feel that I was anybody, you know, I wasn't General MacArthur. I wasn't.
No, you were a pilot or something that got shot down, right?
Somebody so that, it was
pretty wild.
It was actually from what I got in the regression was that I was a sailor on those boats that drop off the Marines to attack the islands in Japan.
Okay. All right. Yeah.
And that we just got bombed by the Japanese, and the ship broke up and sank. And at some point in this experience, I'm yelling, "The zeros are coming. The zeros are coming. We're all going to die." And I mean, that's not a common reference that you'd use in 2023 to refer to the Japanese planes, you know.
Right.
It was interesting. It was absolutely fascinating.
Yeah, it's fascinating. You
know? Yeah. So let me see here.
That's a big mug he's got, folks. You can't see it, but it's fucking big.
It's a 64-ouncer from a Quick Trip. I have to make it through the whole podcast. But we can take a break if you care to.
No, I'm good for now.
Just let me know.
You let me know if you need to. I'm all right.
All right. Speaking of the 1940s or so, or I'm trying to segue this in some way.
No worries.
What are your views on UFOs and the so-called alien abduction phenomena? And I'm linking those two together, but they're not necessarily linked that way.
Okay.
I'm just throwing it out there. What do you think about that?
Oh, man. You could do a whole show on UFOs.
Obviously.
I mean, I'm sure you have, but it's just it's the big daddy of all this. It's fascinating. I came in around the turn of the century, so my heart's with like sort of the old school ufology, Stan Friedman, kind of that old eclectic group of, you know, just sort of outsiders who were trying to figure this out on their own.
Yes, yes.
I have a real soft spot for that era. And nowadays I designate it because, hey, they want it to be their thing. So it's the UAPs. Now we're kind of in this UAP era that started in 2017. With the New York Times thing. So I find all that very kind of boring. Not really boring, but like fun to follow, sort of like a reality show, but it's very reactionary. You can't kind of like play a real role in the process. So it's kind of like you're just hearing the latest stuff. And I don't know. It just doesn't really. I'm just cynical after all these years, so I can't quite.
Oh, I don't blame you for that.
I can't quite believe that. No matter how much it seems to be going that way, I just can't believe the government's gonna like tell her whether there's aliens. I just can't. You know, believe me, I'd love it if it happens. It would be like, but I just can't. You know, it's funny. I believe in the aliens, but I don't believe the government will, tell anyone what it is. And I don't even necessarily know if they're aliens. I use that as the sort of catch-all because, you know, people get, the ETH is whatever. It's like, no, man, I don't mean by the book, like just aliens in general, the visitors or whatever they are, whatever is sort of the other intelligence. I don't think the government really even knows too much. So I think they're kind of, if they're being really secretive, it's maybe they're being really secretive about the fact that they've tried and haven't been able to figure it out for all these years. And they're like, look, we've been trying to figure this out, not just the last 5 years, but like the last 50 years. We just can't, here's everything. We can't figure it out. So I don't know. You know, it's fun.
And
it's It's the Kardashians of the paranormal. It's the most.
That's a good one.
It's the story that, you know, is the big daddy. It occupies the zeitgeist. So, but like following it on a day-to-day basis, I guess, is where I find it boring. It's just like government hearings and fucking NASA papers and DOD reports, and they're all written in this bureaucratic, like, gobbledygook language, and it's there's all these shitty acronyms for agencies and stuff, and there's legislation, and there's like, it's just so fucking boring that it, to me, and I don't believe that necessarily this really has that it's going to lead to aliens. So to me, it's just like, this is just, let's just get back to the UFOs, man. Let's just get back to people who see weird shit, you know, rather than, course, like,
vastly predates,
yeah, the 40s, sure.
Yeah, I guess my take on it is, under the umbrella of UFOs, I think there are several different things going on. I don't think it's one thing, and so I won't rule out there could be physical craft from someplace. I mean, I don't think it's from, you know, that far away, but it could be
from inside of Mars.
It could be, and there's a guy who posts on Instagram, "What's up with Mars?" And everybody should check that out, because he takes NASA footage from the rover and shows things that clearly look like they're either fossils of animals, creatures, or they're clearly constructed. There's no way that wind and water erosion made this. And it puts up pretty regular, and I like that one.
What's up with Mars? Where's that on? Instagram, you say?
Yeah, Instagram, What's Up with Mars. I'll check it out. Oh, it's worth checking out, yeah. And, you know, I won't rule out there could be flesh and blood non-human aliens, okay? Biological entities that are not human but are intelligent. But that wouldn't be the same as the kind of UFO that you see, that only you see it, and it appears for some reason in your life.
Yeah, that's for sure. Different kind. Yeah. As I said before, they're like clouds. They're
different things in there.
Yeah.
And I don't rule anything out. I know we've heard this before, and this is, you know, not maybe the most popular view, but just the fact we've heard it before doesn't mean it's definitely not true. I'm thinking of, do you ever see the show back in the 90s? Lance Henriksen starred in it, Millennium. It was a spinoff of the X-Files.
Vaguely.
Okay. It's one of my all-time favorite shows.
Yeah, and it didn't last long, right? They gave it the...
No, 3 seasons max.
Yeah.
And they killed it all of a sudden without even a wrap-up ending.
Yes, yeah. Fox was the worst with that. Fox does that all the time.
Yeah, it was a drag. So it follows this investigative group that supposedly all former FBI agents that are retired, and they help solve crimes, but it's really something else. And then that's really something. It was fascinating.
Yeah.
And in the Millennium group, there are two factions, the Owls and the Roosters. And this is all coming around a time of, you know, you remember millennial angst, right? Where everybody was freaking out as it got to be closer to the year 2000 and thinking something big might happen, you know, exactly.
Yeah, Y2K.
Y2K and religious folk. And I wasn't so much worried the computers were going to stop. I was worried people had been so prepped for an emergency, they might just freak out and like have riots and stuff, you know?
Yeah, that's what I was concerned about mostly. Yeah. But it was like, I was concerned about that, and that people more that people would freak out. Not that computers would break down, but like there'd be mass suicide.
We can work without computers if we really had to. It would suck, but we could do it. Right. At least we could then.
Look at now. We would
now. I don't know so much.
If we had a Y2K now, we'd be fucked.
Oh boy. But yes, there were two factions: the Owls and the Roosters. The Roosters said, "Hey, something big's going to happen. We need to tell the people the truth right now." And the Owls were like, "Nothing has changed. We don't need to tell anybody anything. It's best to remain silent."
Yeah.
I think there could be two factions like that within the government.
Within, I can see that.
You know, the above top secret, for lack of a better term, that one wants to put this out there and really tell them, show them the ships, show them the bodies.
Yeah, maybe they do have shit, yeah.
And the other side is, we will tell them nothing. Shut the hell up. They will go nuts. They couldn't believe that COVID was real. They're not going to believe aliens.
Yeah, that's my argument against disclosure. Actually, yeah, that the that we saw what happens when they introduce the alien into society. We have a fucking complete fucking breakdown.
Yeah. So and a lot of people, it's just demons. Oh my god, you know, and violence ensues.
I mean, that's entirely possible. It's, I mean, to drill down into the UAP Kardashians saga. It is, you know, there does seem to be, like, you know, people pushing for, they're pushing for the aliens. Let's just cut to the chase. They're pushing for the aliens and they can't get the aliens from the government, but they're pushing harder than ever, which is like, well, we'll see, you know, maybe the fucking government like thinks it's aliens, but they can't prove it's aliens. Maybe that's the problem where they're like, look, we also think it's aliens, but we can't say it's aliens because we can't prove that it's aliens. So, you know, stop asking. So who knows, you know?
Yes, and there's so many possibilities. And I'm thinking of some stuff that Joshua Cutchins has talked about with Faye and how they make something really fancy appear.
Yeah, yeah.
And then when they're done showing it to you, it's just like a pile of rocks and sticks.
Right, right.
And what if that happens with the ships? You know, we have an alien craft. Let's take it apart. And it's just like, this is just a bunch of sand and sticks.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't take anything off the table at this point.
Right, exactly. Yeah. You really can't. Yeah. As long as you get into this, the more, it's why, like, I mean, I really kind of just avoid or just dislike talking about it with people who aren't, the phenomena and a lot of the paranormal, people who aren't into it, like lay people, because it's like, and this isn't really gatekeeping in a sense, it's just like, there's just so much to catch them up on. You know, I don't even know where to begin, because it, you know, do you think those UFOs are aliens? It's like, well, sit down, because here's here's Brad Steiger's list of 36 things that these could be, and you know, each one has merit. Pretty much. Well, you know, I'm a big fan of the sky creature idea. I love that thing. Yeah. I hope that at least like 3% of UFOs are on a yet to be identified, like, sky creatures that are like amoebas. When I say I love that thing,
I didn't mean to show up, you know.
What's that?
When I said I love that thing, I didn't mean I wanted to have one show up by my house or anything.
Well, dude, I mean, I think that a sky creature would be super harmless. Like I said, I think it's like an amoeba or something. I think it would just like float on through the fucking upper atmosphere, and it's like maybe come down every once in a while to eat, or, you know, maybe
that's the part I'm concerned about.
Not people, dude. I don't know. They say, you know, they see them over water and shit and over electricity and stuff. So who the fuck knows? Maybe, you know, but sky creatures, don't rule them out. I love them.
Oh, no. People have seen so many of those and it makes no sense.
Yeah.
That's one of the more fascinating types. I love that one. That's interesting.
Yeah, it'd be cool.
Did I ever mention to you my extremely half-assed UFO sighting?
Not that I'm aware of.
Okay. When I say half-assed, I mean, it's just like, some people see these motherships and these fixed craft with portholes and everything like that. Well, one evening, probably a decade ago, I was getting ready to go to bed, and people preface their sightings sometimes by saying, well, I wasn't drinking. Well, I was. Okay.
I totally appreciate your honesty.
You know, that doesn't make me hallucinate. Okay. I'm not going to see anything that's not there.
Right, right.
I'm not detoxing. I'm actually just had some booze. Anyway, yeah. It's a weekend, so my son is up and he's pretty young. And like, he's a tween or whatever they call him. And I open the door and look out, and I see what I take to be the planet Venus. No big shocker. I'm not saying it's anything other than the planet Venus.
Yeah.
But then there's a red dot of light circling it, just it and circling it the wrong way. Like if it was a satellite, it would pass by more or less from east to west.
Yeah.
It wouldn't go up, down, around in circles around the planet Venus.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm like, it almost looked like a laser pointer, but this is, you know, about midnight, and I don't know what that would even reflect on.
Right,
and
it's
this is red, small light moving in a circle. And I said, hey, I'm going to go out and take a look at that. And my son was getting scared, and he said, can we just say it's a satellite? And I said, you know what? It's a satellite. Let's go to bed.
There you go. You're a good dad.
I closed up the door, locked it, and went to bed.
There you go.
Exactly. It was more important not to scare this child.
Yeah, for sure. Like I said,
find out what's circling around, which isn't going to show itself anyway.
You know, exactly. You're not going to, you know.
Yeah, I'm not going to get any answers, but it's like.
Not unless it fucking came down and abducted you. Then it's like, well, good job, dude. You got you yourself and your kid fucking abducted, so you did the right thing.
Exactly. I felt it better to just let it go at that point. I've had several experiences, but they're all like very brief and not like the kind of detail that some people see. But, you know, some people never see any. I never saw anything much, with a couple exceptions, until I was well into my 40s. So it's, you know, these, who knows?
Look, given the opportunity, I would much rather see a Bigfoot than a fucking UFO anyway, any day of the week. Hands down. Yes. Because at the very least, you're close enough that you can get a pretty good look at it. That if you think you really saw a Bigfoot, you know what I mean? If you're like confident enough that it was a Bigfoot, you know, you saw this thing walk on two legs, like across the road right in front of you, like, you know, you have, and it looked at you, like you have no doubt in your mind it's a Bigfoot. Fuck yes, that's way better than a UFO sighting, because half the time with UFO sightings, you're just like, it's a light, I'm not sure.
It could be a drone, it could be any number of things. Yeah, I get you.
You know, very rarely do you have a story like where the UFO comes down. Like those, you just don't ever hear those stories anymore, which is kind of sad.
Yeah, but
you just never hear any stories about like, oh, the UFO landed and the guy, something came out or whatever. You know, it's interesting.
That's kind of a weird thing too with the, and I put it in quotes when I said it, because the alien abduction phenomena.
Yeah.
Seems to probably, this is my speculation, but seems to probably have nothing to do with aliens from another planet. It seems much more non-physical. And a lot of people have come around to the idea from, and I have no experience with that, but I've come around from the idea to that I was picked up and carried out of my house by these grays. And they put me in the physical ship and flew away. They took me out of my body and took me in an out-of-body experience somewhere else.
Yeah, yeah.
And to me, that's not comforting. That's kind of scary.
Yeah, 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 because for sure.
If they can take you out of your body, that's a lot more powerful than if they can just, like, freeze you and carry you off.
The whole thing is like, I mean, the whole thing is full of like weird logical inconsistencies that kind of leave me scratching my head. Like even in the abduction scenario, sort of like they lift them up and take them through walls and shit. It's like how that's not even, you know, I'm sorry, but part of me is just like, I've grown to be quite the cynic in my old age. So part of me is just like, as soon as I hear, like, the aliens came and they took me through the wall, it's like, nope, that's a dream. You know, you can't, they can't physically bring you through the wall. I don't believe that.
Unless they're only taking your astral body or your soul.
Well, there you go. Right. Know? That's true. They're pulling you through.
Even more scary because I don't want them taking me out of my body.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
I don't want them handling my soul. It's bad enough to handle my body. What the hell?
Well, you know, like I said, that maybe that's part of the bureaucracy of the afterlife. You know, maybe they're like the meter maids. You know, maybe they're just
But
popping in, checking on things, checking on people, you know.
I think Josh was kind of talking about maybe that idea happening in Ecology of Souls, which I won't pretend to have finished. I have started, but
it's a pretty monstrous tome.
Yes.
He should be very proud of himself. He did a great job.
Oh, hell yeah, man.
I have not read it entirely myself either. So, and look, man, I can only read the Bible. Like, I can't do two. I can't do two 1400 page fucking books in my lifetime.
And the Bible doesn't have footnotes.
Exactly.
Let's see. We're getting a little towards the end here, I would suggest. But I do have a couple more questions for you.
Sure. Fire away.
Let's see. Are there any cryptids local to the area where you live? And you live in Massachusetts, right?
Yeah. Yeah, there are supposed to be some diminutive, like a Bigfoot, but like a little, like a diminutive Bigfoot called, they're called Puckwudgies.
Yes, Puckwudgies.
Yeah. They were kind of popularized by my friend Chris Balzano. He kind of jumped on the name and really tried to help get it to stick. And, but they're found all over the country, I guess. A little diminutive, little feet type beings or creatures or whatever. But that's the only, and then like in Western Massachusetts, it's sort of like might be Bigfoot country. So there's a lot of rural and mountainous areas out there. So,
which drives home the problems with that being a flesh and blood animal pretty hard, would you say?
Maybe, but it could be migratory. So,
in Massachusetts, though?
migrating out of Massachusetts. Like it comes through in the summer and fall, and then it loops around and comes back, maybe down through Nebraska or whatever. I don't know. You'd have to, somebody should. I would wish maybe someone's tried, but I would like to see someone take, synthesize all maybe the BFRO website or whatever, and see if you can figure out like a migratory pattern. But I think, if there are Bigfoot in Massachusetts, they're just passing through. And I think that would explain also why, if it is a flesh and blood creature, I haven't completely ruled it out. I would prefer if it was a flesh and blood creature. So I'm biased, I guess, but,
no, it's when I got into it, I totally expected it was just a primate that adapted to living in cold climates.
Oh, for sure. Now there's like, kind of like with
case the resolved, thing. No problems.
Now it's like, I could probably name like five or six different theories or possibilities of what Bigfoot could be. So it's like, it's a puzzle. Everything gets more puzzling the more you look into it. It's crazy.
Yes, yeah.
We all got into this with our sort of mainstreamized take on things where it's like ghosts are these, UFOs are aliens, Bigfoot's like a giant ape that lives in the forest. It's like, then when you get into it more, you're like, ah, shit, this is why we don't know what Bigfoot is, because it's like eight different things it could be. But yeah, so that would be why it would be so hard also to like catch or to track or whatever, because it would be like just on a constant in motion around the country, to evade detection and also bear with the climate and shit. So,
it's interesting. Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't rule anything out. I do.
Once again, you really can't.
It's real. I mean, it's physical animal at the time you see it. Now, is it always there? Does it have like a den, or is it just, did it come in from another dimension, to use a term that's been beaten out of shape? Because it means so many things, it means nothing. But because I kind of have the theory that Bigfoot's having a weird experience when he comes here. That like he goes through the portal or something, not necessarily intentionally, but just kind of wakes up and like, what the hell is this? Who are all these people? Who are these things? I'm used to wilderness and they've destroyed all the wilderness. And where the hell am I? How do I get out of here? I think he's having the paranormal experience as well as the humans who see it. You know?
That's an interesting take. I never thought of it like that. But yeah, that's, yeah, I could see that. That Bigfoot's like, oh shit, what just happened? I slipped through a portal and now here I am in a different place. Yeah. Almost it's like a totally... goldfish when you pull them out of the water.
Yes, yes.
And Bigfoot would be like, what the hell? Yeah. Well, I was just thinking while you were saying that, see, like, uh-huh. we're like, the, to add on to the migratory Bigfoot thing, it's like, it wouldn't even need to, like, really have much of a shelter. It could just, like, what animal, barring, like, a grizzly bear or something, nothing is going to mess with a Bigfoot. It's the, so if it's passing through, you know, it's not like you or me, like, we go, if we're walking through the mountains of the Berkshires or whatever, it's like, you can't just lie on the fucking ground and go to sleep. But Bigfoot could, because nothing is going to like attack Bigfoot, and it would presumably wake up if it heard a human coming. So, you know, it's the alpha of the forest. Oh, it's,
yes, the apex predator there, you know, which always, you know, fascinates me that they always act scary, but not always, sometimes act scary, but they never seem to really hurt anybody. And you know, this thing's 8 to 10 feet tall, 500 to 700 pounds of pure muscle. If it wanted to hurt you, it would hurt you, you know?
I think it knows that, probably, so it just needs to, like, bluff. I mean, I don't know, yeah, it's a mystery, because people, they've been shot at, and, like, things don't seem to happen to it, so it's like, all right, that adds to the paranormal part, so I think in different situations, it could be different phenomena that all appear to be Bigfoot.
That makes a lot of sense, too. Kind of an umbrella of things that it could possibly be.
But it's interesting because you don't see, like, woolly mammoth sightings and shit. So part of it's that's like,
true, too, isn't it?
it's not necessarily that this isn't, you don't see unicorn sightings. Like, you don't really see, you know, dragon sightings. Like, so it's something, there seems to be some kind of kernel, like, there. There seems to be some kind of there to Bigfoot, but I don't know what that is.
Well said, well said. Though, I dive on any possible unicorn sightings that come up.
Oh, shit, yeah. Believe me, so would I.
It's absolutely fascinating. Once in a while, do you read 14 Times at all from the UK?
No, but I'm well aware of it, so highly respected, esteemed publication. But
it's great, yeah.
Yeah, and I don't have much time for leisurely paranormal reading. I was aware of it growing up and shit, and yeah, I just never kind of, it was a victim of, I don't think they ever really went to like an online style.
No, so that's the most frustrating part. I have back issues, yeah. But I have to have the physical hard copy, because they've never archived anything.
Yeah, so it's...
If I want to go back and look at, hey, what was that thing you said? And they're great, because they cover all kinds of things, and they're neither believers nor debunkers.
They seem like a more straight down the middle version of Fate magazine, almost. That's like...
Oh, yes, yes.
But they do, like... And everything else.
Like, they take Fate magazine to, like, actual journalism. They're
right,
good,
right, man. Right.
And right. They've had a couple of unicorn sightings, and it's pretty fascinating.
Nice.
It is the official animal of Scotland. Yes, yes.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, that's real. It's the official...
I think I saw that. Yeah, I think I heard that somewhere.
And once in a while, somebody will say they saw a real one, but, you know, and not just a goat that it had its horn grafted, but a real horse with a real horn, and it's pretty interesting. You're in rural or more urban Massachusetts?
Suburban. Okay. I live 20 minutes outside Boston, so.
Okay.
Yeah. Essentially right next to where the Revolutionary War started. So, Lexington. It's Lexington, then my town, Burlington. So, when Adam Sain came to visit, we took him to all the, he's a big history buff, we took him to all the sites of the great Revolutionary War. Yeah. So that's where I'm at, suburban. It's very much like every other place, you know. It's got all the chains, all the all that kind of stuff. So
probably not wildly different from just outside of Milwaukee, I would guess. Not wildly different in day-to-day life, not in history.
Is that where you are, outside of Milwaukee?
No, I'm in Milwaukee, but I'm close enough to do everything in suburbia because they closed everything down here. But yes.
Right. I'm sure it's the same. Yeah, if you drove like maybe 10 minutes, 15 minutes outside of Milwaukee, you'd find a town just like mine. So they're all kind of the same.
Yeah.
It's nice, though, you know.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I enjoy it. Is there any like folk magic tradition in that neck of the woods?
Not that I'm sure there is, but not that I'm aware of. I mean, the whole thing with the Salem witch trials, like, kind of centered around magic, obviously. So it's, I mean, so there's your, I guess that would be your, I mean, there's the Salem witch trials and everything. So
that's right. That happened right there. Yeah.
Yeah. This area has a very, obviously, then kind of like a very, you know, that kind of stuff probably isn't really, is frowned upon, I guess you could say. You know, maybe not anymore, but certainly I bet it was from the Salem witch trials, like for a very long time after that. Not like it's not like a place like Louisiana or down south or out west where that kind of stuff is more encouraged. I think up here it was like, hey man, we fuck you up if you're into that shit. So, but then it's kind of a reverberation now, though, where there's kind of like this, it's become kind of a hub for that kind of, you know, that kind of stuff. So,
well, witchcraft, I mean, that's
pretty cool. Like, if you go to Salem, it's...
Go to Salem, don't they? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you can't, you know, you can't turn left or right without running into, like, a psychic or a little magic shop. There's tons of them. There's, like, dozens of magic shops. There's, like, something like 25 ghost stores. It's crazy.
Wow.
So, yeah. That's... I'm certainly no, like, Massachusetts historian, but that would be my take on it. That would be kind of like the traditions, the traditional thing here that you associate with here.
I get you. Well, hey, Tim, I'm going to tell you, we should probably wrap things up for the evening.
Oh, okay.
Just for time reasons.
Did I do something wrong?
Oh, God, no.
I know. I'm about to be honest with
you. This guy is always pulling my leg, man. Let me tell you.
There you go. Well, this is a really fun conversation, Vincent. I appreciate you having me on, and it went in a lot of directions that I didn't expect it to go. And I really enjoyed hearing about your experiences, especially the reincarnation thing. That was really fascinating.
Well, thanks. I'm glad when I don't, you know, I want to hear from you. But I also like to kind of have it be a shared experience. And
yeah, for sure. No, I love it. Nice. I was on the edge of my seat. I was like, holy shit. so I really enjoyed it, man. I really enjoyed the conversation, and I hope we can do it again sometime.
Oh, absolutely. There's no way we're not doing it again, as far awesome. As I can do. hey, please take a minute, Tim, and tell our listeners what you're up to and where they can find you.
All right. Well, as we talked about earlier, we revived Been All of America. So just punch in Been All of America on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, I believe the other one is, and YouTube, as well as any other place where you get your podcasts. You know, but if you can't find it at the normal place, you can find it on Spotify and YouTube. Those are the big sites anyway, they tell me. The website, Been All of America, it's just a shell of itself right now. We're hoping to do something with it in the new year. So don't even bother going there. Just go on X or Twitter or whatever, punch in Benal. You can find me there. And Benal of America on Facebook. You know, and as I said, YouTube and Spotify, that's where you can hear the new shows. And I think we're up to like episode 7, this week. So it's going better than I, you know, could have hoped, I guess. You know, we got through the first round of shows and it was like, all right, now we got to kind of keep it going. So we've been taping a bunch of shows, taping one on a couple nights. We've got a lot of fun stuff coming up. Adam Taula on this week's show. And if people want to read my stuff over at Coast to Coast AM, they can do that by punching in coast2coastam.com and then just click on the articles part at the top, or news, or click on the little carousel on the front. You can find it. It's pretty easy. There's just tons and tons of articles. I'm putting out like something like 11 a week or something like that through Coast to Coast. So good stuff from all kinds of weird. As I said earlier, that story about the Monopoly game, that was probably my favorite story this year for Coast to Coast. But I haven't actually sat down and started doing the year in review yet. And I'm sure I'm going to find like a whole bunch of other stories just like that, that I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe that happened. And that's what I really love about the job too. It's like, this isn't a made up story. Like this really, I got it from a Belgian newspaper. Like, you know, it's a cross reference with like two other Belgian news. It's like, come on, man, this is a real thing that happened. It's bizarre and crazy. So I love my job. And folks can find articles on all kinds of stuff over at the Coast to Coast AM website. And yeah, that's about it. So thanks again, Vincent. I really appreciate it.
Oh, you're more than welcome. Happy to have you. Folks,
I would have a very Merry Christmas and a happy holidays.
Same to you. Same to you. This has been The Weird Part. I am your host, Vincent Trewell. Thank you for listening, and good night.